Hi, I'm Sean. I've always been curious about the answers to life's big questions. I thought it would be cool to seek some of those answers through conversations with others on a similar path. My intention with these conversations is to inspire you to think bigger, to challenge what you believe to be possible. I'd like to invite you to think outside the lines. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Think Outside the Lines podcast. Now, as you know, I'm always seeking to evolve the show in every way possible. I do my best to bring on guests who have an interesting perspective or story to tell. And my hope with these conversations is that it causes you to think of things in a different way, or to understand life in a way you may not have previously. Now, I have some amazing guests slated for future episodes, but I'd also love to hear from you. Who would you like me to talk to? What would you like me to ask them? I'd love any feedback you have about the show, so please take a moment to drop me a line and tell me what you think. You can send me an email at hello@thinkoutsidethelines.com. Now, my guest today wants to get us talking about the science behind relationships and draw attention to the things in our relationships that we should be paying more attention to. His goal is to help create a world where couples live in a loving, intimate, and respectful relationship, and they enable their children to grow up feeling loved. He's a keen observer of human psychology. He's a master in neuro-linguistic programming, Ericksonian hypnosis, and a certified results coach. Now, there are a ton of gems in this conversation where we explore how our behavior takes place at both the conscious and unconscious level. And my hope is that there's something you can take away from this conversation and apply it to a relationship in your life. It's time to think outside the lines with Jürgen Schmeckel. So tell me what you believe to be the message that you were brought here to share with the world.
That's an interesting one, because my upbringing was that I'm a mathematician and I have a very, very long, strong logical side in my brain. But a year ago, an epiphany came to me that with now nearly 25 years of marriage, my relationship to my wife is a very, very happy one. And I see so many unhappy relationships around me. Left, right, and center. So not just in Australia, but also in Germany or in the US and pretty much all around the world, people are not making the effort anymore to stay together. And I think that's a great pity, not just for this relationship, but especially for their children, because their children then lose an anchor and they lose a role model, and they're really suffering from it. And then they grow up into the next generation, and how do they then relate to their partner, and how do they then raise their children? So I think if I could have an impact on society by helping couples to stay together, then that has a ripple on effect for their children and as I said, society.
So I'm so excited for this conversation today because my parents have been married for over 40 years. And which is super rare, especially here in the US. And it's funny because I don't know whether that's made like a positive impact on my life, or it's caused me to be like overly idealistic when it comes to pursuing my own relationships. And so I'm really, really excited to dive into some of this today. I also think that I don't think that many people are very intentional these days in terms of how they interact in any of the relationships in their lives. And I love that you're out there making it your mission to help people really enhance their potential in this area. I also really love your focus as it pertains to children, because so much of what we're exposed to in our childhood has an impact on the rest of our lives. And I think that if we can be more intentional with how we communicate around children and what kind of environment that we expose them to, I really think that it could make the world a more peaceful place. So.
Absolutely. And the stats are shocking, so I don't know whether you know them. 50% of all children in North America witnessing at least one divorce within their time of growing up. So that means their parents get divorced, and then 5 years later they get married again, and then they get divorced again. So there's another critical stat. So the moment you have children involved in a split up, 70% of the time, the youngest one is younger than 2 years old.
Wow.
So So the children are there, and suddenly the parents are only parents and not lovers anymore. And then they start to fight, maybe over money, maybe over the children, maybe over sex. And then it deteriorates and the suffering. So then a child younger than two is missing out of one of their parents. And I think that's devastating.
Yeah, it is. And you know what? I'm excited to dive into this a little bit later in the conversation, but yeah. I'm fascinated to get your perspective too on, because yes, I think it's important for people to have like consistency, especially, you know, kids with their parents. But I also think that, and I don't want to get into this quite yet because I think that's a question for later, but it's important to know when to leave the relationship too, right? Because sometimes you can't just stay because you want to stay or because.
Yeah, absolutely. So having said all this before, I still think divorce has its place. And sure. I think divorce can be good, because if you just stay together for the child's sake, so you're lying to yourself, you're lying to your spouse, you're lying to everybody around you, and that will show. That will show in your own physics, that will show in your own life, and you get stressed out of this about this. So there is a place for divorce, but I think people jump into divorce too early because it's so easy nowadays. It's like,
correct. I agree with that. So I want to start with a pretty like basic foundational question. Why do you think it is that people are so challenged when it comes to effective communication in their relationships?
It actually is 10,000 years old or even older. Back then, men were hunter and were hunting, and women were gathering. So the hunters were out and about all day, and they're coming back, and they want to sit around the fire and not talk because they just want to settle down, and they've probably been full of adrenaline and full of excitement, and they just want to sit down and stare into the flames.
Yeah.
Nowadays it's called television. And for the women, it was so essential to have a conversation with the other women because they needed to know who is sick in the community. They needed to know where to find special herbs. They needed to know who is pregnant, and they needed to know who is sick. So that's why a woman, even today, can hold three conversations at the same time without any effort, whereas men hardly can have one conversation.
Yeah.
And if we would acknowledge this kind of difference, which is basically in our genes, and then start from there and understand. So if the man coming home from work and wants to stare into the flame, so maybe instead of staring into the flame television, maybe just settle down, have a cup of tea together with your spouse, and then just allow your spouse, meaning the wife, to unload what's on her mind, because she wants to talk about 100 miles an hour, and he needs to acknowledge that he needs to be there for her to unload her words, and then eventually he can also unload his things which he is on his mind, like maybe bad traffic on the way home, or maybe a boss was yelling at him. So things which he usually wouldn't share, he then can share, and that's absolutely essential in our nowadays society to understand where we are coming from. As I said, 10,000 years of different communication forms, but we are now in the 21st century, and we need to understand that the demands on us are different, and therefore we need to behave differently, consciously, and make an effort.
Yeah, I love that, and I think that. I what I'm hearing is that there's sometimes just very basic conversation that we're not having with each other, and that's part of the reason why other things can escalate, right? So you're saying, like, just sit down in the morning and listen to each other, and
absolutely, yeah. So especially in America and also in Australia, first thing in the morning, the television goes on. Yeah. So you don't need to talk to each other. And again, another stat. The average couple nowadays speaks 7.5 minutes with each other per day. And that's including what's for dinner and can I have the butter, please?
Wow.
Because we spend so much time commuting to work. We spend so much time working, and then we come home and we just don't want to connect with our loved ones because we think, oh, we don't need to make an effort. She's there or he's there. I don't need to make any effort. But that's wrong.
Well, there's just so much going on. There's so much going on in our daily lives, right? And so I think to your point, it's sometimes easier to, you know, when you've just sat in traffic for 2 hours to get home, you just want to veg out in front of the television because you don't want to have to think about anything. You already did that today, right?
Correct. Yes. Yeah.
I also think it's interesting too, from a progressive standpoint, I guess we've progressed as a society in such a way that women now hold prominent careers, and that wasn't a thing long ago, right? And so I think that the financial dynamic in the relationship, and I know we're going to touch upon that a little bit later, but women don't need a man anymore, basically, right? And so the idea of staying with somebody just because you are financially dependent on them isn't a thing so much in 2018 as it used to be, right?
Yes, but that's only addressing the financial dependency.
Sure.
I think there is a way deeper dependency, and that is our need for love and connection. We want to grow old together with someone. We don't want to grow old alone.
Yeah.
And that's, again, some very, very basic needs. And I think Anthony Robbins have them pretty much pointed out. He says one of the basic human needs is love and connection.
Absolutely. I'm a big believer in trusting your instincts in all areas of life, especially when it comes to communication. Like, that's something that personally I pride myself on. But I do observe that I think there's a lot of people that don't follow their instincts when it comes to, you know, telling people they care about, especially how they feel or what's really going on. And if someone, I guess my question is, if someone senses that they have this inability in their lives and wants to change that, what are some steps that they can take to get started in that realm?
That's an interesting question, because our society really doesn't want you to show emotions.
Correct.
So it's, and if you look at children and how they behave, so if just imagine you have a bunch of children in front of you and you would say who would like to do or to sing a song, you would have 10 fingers coming up. Me, pick me. And then you have 10 adults in front of you and say who wants to sing a song, and they would all look at their
they're scared to death
and they're scared to death because it's not supported in society. So from early age on, it's like don't be special. Don't stand up. You might be exposed. You might get hurt. And so how to change this? This is very difficult. I think if the moment you are conscious about this, that that your emotions are there to show, then you might be able to actually open and show them, especially in a safe environment like your home and with your spouse. You should be able to show your emotions. Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think for me personally, like, it's something that I became conscious of in my adult life, because to your point, we live in a world where as kids, it's really suppressed when you show emotion, right? It's like, oh, especially for boys, it's like, oh, don't cry. Yeah. Don't be sad about this, like, man up, whatever. And so as an adult, I found myself needing to, like, again, communication is something that's really important to me. And so I have to really be mindful in those moments of like, no, I need to communicate my perspective here. And this is important to me, because everything around us tells us that we shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
From your perspective, what are the key elements in every relationship?
I think that it comes down to three things, and we already touched on one. And the three things are quality time, talking, and sex / intimacy. So if one of these three is permanently missing, then your relationship is in a downward spiral. And the interesting thing, the most important of these three is quality time. And that's the first thing to go. Everybody looks at the sex and thinks, we don't have sex anymore, and then therefore our relationship is dwindling. That you don't have sex anymore is a result of that you don't have quality time together. And how does this evolve? So again, let's look at a normal couple. They get together, they date, and during this dating phase, they are totally excited. See you on Friday. Oh, yes, I'm so looking forward to Friday. And during the week, you text, you call, and everybody is really anxious to come to Friday, because then on Friday night, you want to go out, you go to the movies, you go to a party, and eventually you end up in bed between the sheets. But then, let's say you do this for 3 months or maybe 6 months, and then you decide, wouldn't it be easier if we would just move together? And there the buck stops, because
that's when it begins.
that's where you say, "Ah, see you tonight, darling." Yeah, but I've got my soccer training tonight. All right, okay. So see you in the morning. No, I've got my yoga training in the morning. So all right, see you. So it becomes so normal that you see each other that you don't make the effort anymore to have time together going out. And I call this an active appointment. In opposition to a passive appointment is this daily routine, see you tonight, darling. But an active appointment means you sit together with your spouse and you put a date in your calendar on a weekly basis, on a fortnightly basis, where you say, let's go out next Friday, go to the movies, or let's go out for a walk at the beach, or let's go out and meet such and such. So that you really make an effort to have time together, quality time together, and then we come to the communication, then the talking is possible, because you're not in the daily grind. Then you have time together, you talk together, and eventually you have quality sex as well.
So that's interesting. I mean, that seems so obvious, right? Like we should schedule time for, you know, intention and intimacy and all those things. But what happens when, you know, you've got the kids and you can't get a sitter and, you know, there's the work and the commute and all of those things? Like, how do you schedule that time when you don't have it?
Again, it's a conscious effort to do this. And my rule of thumb is, if you take 10% of your mortgage or your rent, so let's say the weekly rent is $600, so take 10% of that, the $60, and invest that on a weekly basis in your relationship. So $60 gets you 2 hours of babysitter and maybe a pizza around the corner. If you do this on a fortnightly basis, that gives you $120. And with $120, you get again two hours of a babysitter, and that already gives you a dinner at a nice restaurant. So it buys you time, and there will be someone being able to babysit. So it is an effort to allow this. And I know that a lot of, especially women, have a difficulty with letting go of their young children and let that someone else look after them. But usually maybe the grandmother's around, and ask them to come around. You need private time with your spouse. You need to be lovers and not just parents.
Yeah.
And for that, you need to schedule time. And it is absolutely essential. It's absolutely essential.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think that really what it comes down to is there can be a million excuses, but at the end of the day, you have to be intentional about what it is you want. And just figure out a way to make it happen. And I think that, to your point, there's always a grandmother, a friend, a kid next door. Like, someone can watch the kids. It doesn't have to be an expensive day. So, like, throw all the excuses out the window, basically, and just do it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And kids are picking up on it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
There's a nice saying, the best thing a man can do for their children is to love their mother.
Oh, I love that.
Because children pick up on the dynamics between their parents, and if the dynamic is stressed because they are not having the time to even to have quality sex, then that stress will be shown, and the children pick up on this, and then the children get grumpy and get annoyed. The opposite is true. Just let them be for a moment and buy yourself some time. And have quality time with your spouse. And of course, in our modern society, you need to add to this, leave your iPhone at home.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I also think, like, a simple solution could also immediately be, you know, the kids go to bed and don't go into the den and turn on the television.
Absolutely.
You know, leave your iPhone downstairs and go upstairs and have a conversation with your spouse. That's something very simple, and it's free, right? What is your take on the different phases of a relationship? And is your advice any different to someone who's at the beginning of a relationship versus somewhere in the middle?
So this active appointment, I think, is especially essential for people in the beginning of their relationship. But my general advice is throughout the whole relationship. So as I said earlier, even after 25 years, it's daily work. And we, even after 25 years, have active appointments, and we make an effort. Our kids are now grown up, so the first one is out of the house. The second one is hardly ever here because he's with his girlfriend or with his friends. But still, our daily routine and our daily work obviously keeps us working and keeps us apart. So we still need to make an effort to have the time together and travel together and spend quality time together. So that's throughout the whole relationship, and that never stops. And I've made a little bit of a research. I've asked couples like your parents who've been together more than 20 years, and the common denominator when I ask them, so what's the main reason you say your relationship has worked for so long, the common denominator is communication. We are talking about everything.
Interesting. So my theory is that people don't really change all that much unless they personally feel some motivation or obligation to. And so really the only person that we can change in a relationship is ourself. So I'm curious to know.
That's absolutely true for everything in life. It's not just for a relationship.
Oh, 100%.
You can only change yourself.
Absolutely.
You can't.
But I'm curious to know if you think that we have the right to try to change someone in a relationship.
No, absolutely not. So, because you're not his mother or you're not her father, you don't have the right to change someone. Obviously, you need to understand where the other person is coming from, and that's the first effort again to make a conscious decision to question what's going on right here, and am I okay with this or am I not? And if you say this behavior of your spouse is not okay for you, say so.
Yeah.
But say so as a message from yourself saying, hang on, darling, you're just doing your toenails at the dinner table. I really don't like that. Instead of shouting and trying to, you're always so untidy, and if you don't change, I leave you. That's the wrong attitude, because you can only give signals how the behavior of the other person is influencing your own mood and your own situation. And then the other person can react to this and say, all right, sorry, I didn't mean to. I will never do this again, that kind of thing. But you cannot change the other person, and you don't have the right to change the other person.
Yeah, and sometimes, you know what? I learned in my last relationship that sometimes it's not about the person is never going to, like, sometimes maybe they don't want to not pick up their clothes. You know what I mean? And so what I learned is that if it's bothering me that you're not picking up your clothes, then I need to either accept that the clothes are going to be there, right?
Yeah.
Or I need to pick them up myself and be okay with that, because you didn't live in a world where you ever felt it was necessary to pick up your clothes. I mean, okay. I think that's part of, like, the communication and also understanding yourself, right? Like, why is this really bothering me?
And to add to this, there's a nice little anecdote. When you meet someone, you make a picture of that person, and then you try to make the person match the picture.
Absolutely.
Instead of making sure that the picture matches the person.
Yeah. Instead of allowing them to be who they are.
Absolutely.
Because I would also argue that there's things about them that if they were to change, there's things that you love about them that would probably change along with those things, and then that would impact things too, right?
Yeah.
Well, you've touched on communication. I'd like to know what you think some of the other challenges can be in relationships.
Well, some of the other challenges is also a neglected thing. People don't think about it. You are not brand new. You have a history. There is some sort of life before you got together. And this, I call it baggage, is as big as a sea chest. So, and some of your behavior is a result of past experience. Like you just said, with the previous girlfriend, you had that kind of experience. So with your next girlfriend, you might take that experience into it and react different from what you would have done previously. And therefore, one of the challenges is to kind of exclude all these outsized voices. So it might be that your mother-in-law does not like your spouse. and so it doesn't like you. So or your own mother has a problem with your spouse. But that should not be have an impact on your relationship, but it oftentimes does.
Yeah, I agree with that. Aside again from communication, are there other common threads that you see in relationships that tend to last?
Money comes to mind.
Yeah.
And I even have the saying that money is more important than sex in a relationship.
So I was going to touch upon that in a minute because I'm really curious to hear you elaborate on that. Go ahead. Because I think some people would beg to differ.
Yes, I know that. It's a little bit provocative, but it's actually true. Because, let's start with the end. If a relationship goes bust, what are we talking about? Just money. From then on, everything is just talk about money. Yeah. So the first thing people do, they cancel credit cards or they lock you out from their accounts and what have you. So there's no, remember when we did this and this? No, there is only money talk. But go back to the beginning. Sex changes over time due to pregnancies, due to stress, due to aging. And we are fine with that because we understand, our moods change and therefore our sex life changes. But the relationship to money, when you're a stingy person at 15, you will be a stingy person at 65. So if a stingy or frugal person meets a big spender, there will be always this kind of money discussion and money difference in your relationship. And to add to this, oftentimes there is a understanding that when children are around, that the woman, and I'm stereotyping here, the woman stops and she stays at home and for some time is not earning her own money. And that is very, very dangerous because our self-worth and our self-appreciation is based on money. And therefore, I absolutely advocate that people keep working even when the children are around, because you want to have your own money and you want to have your own available money.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I also agree that I think a lot of relationships can end over financial issues simply because of the fact that, you know, when you have stress and bills and debt and, you know, things like that, it's stressful outside of a relationship, let alone in a relationship. And so, you know, it does make sense why money is so important.
So I think we should have three bank accounts, one each and one common. So and then pay into this common bank. So out of the common bank account, you pay the mortgage, you pay the rent, you pay the groceries, you pay the holiday, you pay the car repair and everything. But into this common bank account, you pay according to your means. So if someone is earning 200,000 and the other one is earning 20,000, each one is, let's say, putting in 60% of their income. So 120,000 for the big income earner and 12,000 for the lower income earner. That leaves everybody with money at their own disposal.
Yeah, so he can't get mad that you went out and bought a pair of shoes or, you know, whatever, right?
Absolutely. And do you remember the time when you were 10 years old and you're on holidays with your parents and, "Mom, can I have an ice cream?" "No, not now." So that's how it feels like when you're suddenly without money. It's like, can I buy a pair of shoes? No. Can I buy a camera? No. So, but it's my own money. No, it's not your own money. So then you start to bitch or bigger around money, which is totally unnecessary.
Yeah, I agree with that. How can we work to build more trust in relationships?
Trust is an interesting thing because trust can't be bought. You only can build trust. So keeping promises is a very simple answer. So you say you bring the milk tonight, so you bring the milk. And over time, whenever you keep promises, that adds up to what Stephen Covey even talks, says is an emotional bank account. So you have a kind of trust bank account with your spouse that whatever you say is law and you keep that promise. And then the other person is trusting you implicitly as a result of that.
I actually like that a lot, because I think that sometimes, you know, there will be an affair in a marriage or something along those lines, and it might seem impossible to start to rebuild some of that trust. But to your point, I think it starts with the little things, right? And if you prove that you can be trusted for the little things, then naturally, you know, as a natural progression, the bigger things will come to light as well. I like that a lot.
But if I may just interrupt you there, because I think an affair in a relationship is not a result of bad communication or anything. It's a lack of respect. And I think if you respect yourself, and you then you won't cheat on the other person.
So I don't disagree with that, but then what does it mean for the other person that's cheated on in that instance? So like you said, it's that person that committed the act is disrespecting the relationship, but
Yes,
then
it's first of all, it's disrespecting themselves,
sure.
and then also disrespecting their partner. Yes, what does it leave the other person with? That's a big question, and I don't have the one size fits all answer to this, because I think violating that level of trust is absolutely for me a no-go zone within a relationship.
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, to digress a little bit,
Yeah.
there are modern relationships that don't see that as big of a deal as people used
Yeah.
to, or other
Yeah.
generations do even. And so
Yeah.
it's fascinating to me how that element of like even having like an open relationship or the cheating is not necessarily, you know, as big of a deal to some people as it might be to others. I'm really fascinated by that concept.
Yeah, I'm just reading a novel about Japan and history over there, where having a consort was quite normal. So
Yeah.
your spouse even organized the consort so that the male was still feeling vital and active even in later age. And everybody was fine with this. This was culturally accepted. But I think we have evolved from there. And yeah, also horses for courses. So if you're mutually agreeing on an open relationship, then it's fine. But if it's only one-sided, then obviously you have a real big problem.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's right there is kind of the nail on the head because if you are with a partner who is open to, you know, I guess the idea of such a thing, that's very different than, you know, one person thinking they're going into something that's, you know, 100% committed versus the other person thinking that's not the case. But that's a whole nother podcast.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I also realized that what I kind of teach or what I try to convey to people is for the Western world, is for countries like Canada, the US, Europe, and Australia. But it's not necessarily true for a lot of Asian countries,
Sure. Well, and it's
where
also
the
for
cult.
what you teach is also for people that aspire to remain, be in, and remain in a lasting and committed relationship, right? And that might not be for everyone. Yeah. Having said all of this, when do you think it is time to walk away? When do you think a relationship is technically over?
We've touched on these three elements of quality time, talking, and sex. And if one of them, and usually it's not just one of them, is missing permanently, then you really need to sit down and think for yourself, so what's my expectation? Is it going to change? Is there a light at the end of the tunnel? Or is this relationship not going anywhere? And you need to take a serious assessment and obviously weigh up the consequences. But as I said earlier, divorce is not bad. On the contrary, if the relationship is really over, then a divorce and an early divorce is better for you, because first off, children pick up on, as I said earlier, children pick up on this. So don't try to fool your children, because they know exactly what's going on. And don't try to fool yourself, because you're not getting younger.
That
Meaning,
is the truth.
if you are living in a broken relationship, let's say for a year or for 2 years, you get stressed. You get a lump in your stomach, and it's terrible for your own psyche. And then, as I said, you're not getting younger. So if you want to have another relationship after that, you need to be young to be on the market and be attractive. It's as simple as it is.
And it is quite that simple. If someone listening right now is maybe they've been challenged in dating or finding a partner, what advice would you give them in terms of working on themselves to find the love that they're seeking?
You can only give what you have yourself.
Yeah.
That's true for a pen. If I have a pen, I can give it to you. If I don't have a pen, I can't give it to you. If I don't have love for myself, I can't give love to other people. If I don't respect myself, I can't give respect to other people. So it is a work on yourself. It is oftentimes disconnect to reconnect with yourselves. Disconnect means turn off television, turn off your phone, turn off your computer, and just either meditate or go into nature and ground yourself so that you are whole as a person, and then you can attract another whole being.
Yeah, I mean, I really do think it's that simple. It's about understanding that, like, you can only offer someone else what you're able to offer yourself, right? And you're only capable of receiving what you're able to offer. And I think a lot of people miss that concept.
Yeah, and on top of that, I only want from the other person what they are freely wanting to give.
Correct.
Because also that I see oftentimes as a problem, that as we touched on earlier, that you make a picture of the other person, that you think that other person can give you whatever, but they're not willingly, and then you kind of force it either verbally or sometimes even physically, which is a total no-no. Again, that doesn't bring you a nice and lasting relationship.
Yeah, I agree. What do you hope will be the lasting legacy of the work that you've done in this realm?
I've got a huge goal. I want to save 1 million marriages.
Wow.
One child at a time. And I can't do this all by myself. So I want to build a tribe, which I call Love by Design, a tribe which is of like-minded people, and we all understand that we need to be conscious about our relationships to change them and to make them lasting and loving and intimate and respectful, and therefore or thereby helping our children to be raised loved and not suffering.
So this is your Facebook group, right? Tell us more about it.
Yes. So I've got a Facebook group which I call a tribe. It's called Love by Design. So if you search on Facebook for Love by Design, you find this Facebook group. And there I want to touch on these different topics which we touched on during our conversation here. It's very early stages at the moment, and so it's a small group, and we have small discussions and posts on different topics around relationships. And it's also interesting for singles, because when you learn about relationship, you might realize, oh, this went wrong in my last relationship. Or on the other side, you know now what to look for in your next relationship. So it's not just for people in a relationship, it's for also for people who are single and they want to find the right relationship.
I love it. And I'll make sure that all the links are in the show notes for anyone that wants to connect. I like to end all my conversations on a positive note. So I want to ask you, what inspires you most about what you see in the world today?
That we are living in an abundance world of beauty, if we only would be able to open our eyes.
I love that very much. Jürgen, I have really enjoyed our conversation.
Me too.
I think a lot of people out there will find great insight in your perspective. So if someone listening wants to connect with you further, aside from the Facebook group, go ahead and tell us how we can do it.
I've got a website which is called Inspiring Relationships. So it's www.inspiring-relationships.com. And there you find all about me. And please connect. I run workshops here in Sydney. or Australia, and hopefully I'll be able to also do some speaking engagements, not just in Australia, but maybe around the world. But that's future, and I'm on this in the stage of writing a book, and so that will come out hopefully later this year. So please connect with me on www.inspiring-relationships.com and find out more.
All right, I want to thank Jürgen for joining me today, and my apologies for butchering his name. Now, if you're enjoying the show, please subscribe and leave a review on Apple Podcasts, and please share this episode with anyone you think could benefit from hearing it. Now, you can find the links for everything we talk about in the show notes, which can be found over at thinkoutsidethelines.com. And feel free, as always, to drop me a line with any questions or feedback on the show. You can always send an email to hello@thinkoutsidethelines.com. Until next time, go out there and pursue your passion today, because the best way to predict the future is to create it. For more information, please visit thinkoutsidethelines.com.